This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Kenton just said something. Kenton often says something. He's going to say something more this morning.
Well,
we're going to talk about ageism and sexism.
We hope that Kenton's going to say a lot this morning because that's why we've got him here, really, isn't it?
Absolutely.
To get his opinion.
We hope he gets a word in edgeways with Lena in the studio. So.
Look, I'm the youngest person here, so I don't understand what you old people are talking about.
The youngest by a long way.
Yeah. You know, like. Oh, like. 3 years?
Oh,
years,
half a five. Century younger
yeah,
than Carol. I mean, Kenton and I are a bit closer to you.
Shall we not go there again?
I'm just stirring up the ageism pot a bit.
You might remember this running gag from such previous shows as... I think that we can leave Carol's age well and truly alone. You've done that to... I was going to say you've done it to death, but then you just play with
I'm
that.
But I'm just getting closer to that, yes.
Yeah, closer to that. Well, you know, what would you say about my ageism jokes with Carol and ageism and sexism? And what do you think are the big issues that we need to look at around that the issue of ageism, sexism?
Well, ageism, racism is what we're really here to discuss. So if we want to talk about...
racism?
If we want to talk about age and how it plays with one's mind and decrepitude, that's a really good starting point. Yeah. But what does it say about your uncomfortable jokes about Carol's age? Probably, I don't know, something about internalised ageism and your own fears around, you know, what you face in the nearish future. That would be one possibility.
Let's get real here, Jeff. You are not far behind me.
No, I'm not. And that's why I think I can do it, because I'm very aware of my ageing process. My next big one is 60.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like that I'm a youngster.
Does the community make you feel that age, do you think?
I don't know. See, I don't know what I feel. I don't feel that age. If you asked me what age I felt, I'd probably say about 40. But I don't know what that means, and I don't know what it's like to feel a certain age.
Can I ask something, though? And I'm deadly serious when I say this. This is not a joke. When I look in the mirror, I tend to kind of... Well, sometimes I admit some mornings I get a bit of a shock, but... Generally speaking, when I look at myself, when I think of myself, I really don't think or see anything different to what I did when I was about 18. Now, I do know that physically I do look different to when I was 18, but internally I don't feel that much different. I think I know a lot more.
Mm.
Well, actually, I probably know a lot less because when I was 18, I actually knew everything. Yes. Now I know that I don't, and each year tells me how much more I don't. So I keep, you know, I'm learning that I know less and less and less.
I think that's true. I think that learning more. What I wish that can never happen, but sometimes I wish I had the experience of life that I have now, and was younger and had more years to. Implement the experience, but then, you know, it's a bit of an oxymoron, isn't it? You can't have that, so.
Today by the panel of Jess and Carol. Carol, I have to say, I two thoughts come up for me. One is, I do think that when we grow older and we look in the mirror, our eyes do a wonderful editing job.
Mm.
And sometimes it's only the friends and family members who haven't seen us in a while who remind us that we have changed. My favourite thing is when people greet me and go, "Oh my God, you're fat." Which my favourite response is, "Oh my God, when did that happen?"
Yeah.
As if I hadn't noticed.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, regardless of age, I think that all of us look in the mirror and get two messages. We play two messages at the same time quite often. And one of them is, "Oh my God, who could ever love this? Look at the state of it." And the other is, "They're so lucky to have me. They couldn't do any better than this. What are they thinking of when they criticise or reject this?" And we run those simultaneously a fair bit.
Yeah.
But rather than hang out at the aged end of the spectrum, I wouldn't mind actually having a discussion around what does look like aged or old within the LGBTIQQ community, to borrow from Lena's alliterative acronymist stuff. When do you reckon the age starts to feel? Well, when do people who go out on the scene start to feel old, do you think?
Well, I think for me, it was definitely a few years ago when I went out to a club that, let's say, I hadn't been to in a little while, and I looked around and I saw all the people in the space who visibly looked a lot younger than me. And even though I've been told repeatedly that I don't look my age, whatever that might mean, but and I supposedly dress young, and I think that's something that I actually want to talk about for a second, visual cues as to how you portray yourself. And I think that just looking around and seeing a lot of younger queer women or queer men, and just thinking that, well, I now don't belong to the same group of people that I once did 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. So now I am an older queer, and I'm talking that I hadn't even hit 30 at that time. And so now I need to step back and move away from these venues or spaces where I used to be comfortable in, because now I'm going to be looked at as, ugh, you're one of those old people hanging around here.
So you're basically, that's a form of sexism in a sense. I don't fit in because I'm now too old. You know, it's
what
really...
What it presupposes is that young people rule these spaces as well.
It's a kind of a ritual that, you know, when you first come out, the number one thing for most people, and of course it's changed in the last 5, 10 years and it'll continue to change, but for most people it was venues. It was for venues for me in the 80s. It was, you know, well, sorry, 90s actually.
I was going to say 80s.
That's right. I was going to say, I was at it, 12, 13. No, it was venues in the 90s, but now it's not so much that. A lot of young people do have access to coming out spaces which don't involve nightclubs. But for us, it did, and I can speak. Yeah, I can
there
say
was
it,
nothing
for all,
else.
Exactly. For the four of us in this room, it was the nightclub scene. Yep. So now, if you go back to those same nightclubs, they're going to look at you, the people there, as to what are you doing here? This isn't a space for you. This is this is our space now.
But I was here before you, buddy, so that's move it, over.
Exactly.
So and by the way, it's not a nightclub, it's a disco.
But can I just say, though, that my partner and I were talking about, because we're in our 30s, and the idea of turning 40 is a very exciting idea, but it doesn't actually seem real, because 40 does seem like all grown up almost, you know, and somehow 30s doesn't. 30s does still feel young, even though I'm sure anyone in their teens or, you know, early 20s would think 30 is old.
Well, 30 was the worst for me.
Absolutely.
Turning 30 was really, really difficult. 40, absolutely. 50, nothing. Didn't even blink.
But
for
now
some
it's
reason,
40,
30,
50, yeah.
Yeah.
And the TV show Queer as Folk, when Brian Kinney turned 30 in the US version, there was the fake coffin and everything. It was the worst age you could turn.
That's right.
But the younger you are, the bigger those gaps loom. I can recall being 17 and having friends who were 21, and they were so much more life experienced and ancient, and I took their wisdom and guidance.
Absolutely.
Well, I remember being taught by a teacher in high school who was a teacher, and I'd call them Mr. So-and-so, and they must have been 4, maybe 5 years older than me, because they're just out of school. I mean, just out of teacher's college uni. And it seemed like a huge age gap, like decades difference.
Can we just also talk about, just while we're in spaces right now in those discos, and talk about just... The way you, I mean, okay, you go to a disco, it's a meat market. You're even if you're not looking to pick up, 99.9% of the people there are looking to be, are going to be judging everyone on the visual appearance and are going to be judged back on that visual appearance. So what you dress, you know, what you look like is all, it's, that's basically it. You may or may not even have a conversation with the person before you pash them. So... Now, just on that though, it's really interesting from when I first came out, and again speaking from personal experience, and visually, I've been told repeatedly that I've got a very Middle Eastern or Arab appearance, Lebanese, Turkish, whatever. Now, that's not actually my ethnicity, but that's how physically the world has seen me or decided to. And I've actually had women say to me, you know, oh, I'm into Arab women, or oh, this is so hot, oh, will you put a veil on, you know?
What?
Which Anyone who knows me just finds that hilariously funny. But
now I can say why you wanted to pash them before they talked. There's an extra motive there.
I talk your runa.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh,
and it's interesting how our preconceived ideas of what we are attracted to or what we want can then determine so much as to, and I'm not even going to use the fetish word right now, but supposedly people use that as a justification to exclude people that they may or may not consider because they may go, oh, I'm not into Arabs or I'm not into Asians or I'm not into, you know, into blacks without actually having any kind of basis as to, well, why, you know. Challenge that with.
Well, I think my sense is that, you know, the disco scene discriminates against anybody who doesn't.
Can't you mind if we call it nightclub? Because nightclub? Disco predates me, so
nightclub. Whatever.
Nightclub. I suppose it's the dance scene, you know.
Yeah, the dance scene. Nightclub sort of for me has a bit of a heterosexual connotation, but I don't know why. But it's But, you know, we know what you mean, the venues, the whatever. Mm. It's my sense is that the kind of attitude discrimination there is against anyone who doesn't fit what you're looking for. So it's like, you know, older people don't fit in so much. Overweight people don't fit in so much. People of various ethnic origins that, you know, the majority there, depending on the nightclub or the venue a little bit, would be, you know, Caucasian Australian. So there's kind of the whole range, and anybody that moves outside of that, of what's seen as the desirable image, doesn't seem to fit. Like, feels, I think, a bit like an outsider. So it's a kind of a, I think, because it's so superficial that, you know, you made the point, Elena, about going there to, you know, pick up. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying it's wrong, but it is superficial. It's about body appearance and not the person in a fuller sense.
Well, it's difficult to meet someone and connect with them in an in-depth discussion about their moral, ethical outlooks and their politics over the top of said music.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
But on the other hand, I think this is both the advantage and disadvantage of the virtual communities that have sprung up. In some ways, those virtual communities have unfortunately carried forth some of that racism within the, oh, I use the R word, some of that discriminatory behaviour. But in other ways, I've also noticed, and in conversations with my friends, that it's opened up a safer place for people to admit to an attraction to that which they would not admit to if they were out in the kind of venue where their friends could see them picking up that kind of person.
Right. Yeah.
So the older, the fatter, the Asian, the etc.
Yeah.
Where in certain locations they wouldn't want to be seen to be pursuing that online. Yeah. As opposed to offline, it does get explored a bit more.
So it's almost like you have to conform that there's something, you know, you'd be seen as not bad, but something wrong with you if you admitted to an attraction to someone outside of that kind of central idea.
Mm. I think the interesting thing about any of these isms, whether it's racism or ageism or whatever, it's about making a judgment about a person without actually knowing anything about them other than perhaps their age or their race or, you know, ethnicity, which is a really, when you really think about it logically, it's a very strange thing to do.
But we do it all the time.
Precisely, we do. Why do we do it when it is, if you really think about it logically, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
No, and the most annoying, I think one of the most frustrating things about it is the fact that we would jump up and down and scream if the mainstream community treated us differently because we're queer. We'd be screaming, oh my God, this is so terrible, you know, you cannot treat us, you know, horribly, it's nasty. It's nasty, but we think it's okay as queer people to treat within our community people the way that we wouldn't accept from people outside of our community.
I think that's true.
And that's where it lies, the actual problem. Like, I'm not saying everyone should love everyone, and yes, we should, you know, we're going to become this wonderful, happy little family. I'm saying that we really need to explore why is it all right for us to get angry at, you know, at people outside of our community, but it's okay for us to treat, you know, people like that. I did also want to say that the Australian, here it comes, Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Trans and Intersex, Queer, Multicultural Council, I do say that a lot so I can do it in one breath, they came about in 2004 to try and address issues of not having a space where they felt, you know, the different non-Anglo background communities could actually find a safe space to talk, to exchange ideas, to explore, you know, what actually it means to be, you know, ethnic and queer, and whether you can have that double-edged sword or living in two identities possible. And they've had, it's 2009 now, and they've had two conferences, they've put out papers, there's a book on its way, and they continue to try and be an umbrella organisation for the different multicultural groups out there and auspice them and support them. Mm. And there is obviously still a need for that kind of organisation because, having been involved in it, you know, there are people from all over Australia and groups all over Australia who continue to support the need for a space which isn't predominantly the typical Anglo-gay community, which is out there, unfortunately. And I'm not saying that should go away. I'm not saying, yes, you know, death to all the gay white men. I'm saying that...
I think I'm pleased, okay, yes.
There might be a couple in the room right now. But I'm not saying that. I'm saying that that's basically what the media sees, that's what the space is mainly made up of, there will always be a need for people who don't fit in that model to be supported and to have a voice.
Mm. Mm. I want to track back to something else you were talking about, though, and that's the eroticising of the exotic. You know, I can't lose the image at the moment of you in a veil doing a little dance and everything. but I'm fascinated because I can recall a friend who years ago said to me, and she's, thank God we're not on the internet, folks.
She's actually dancing.
It's beautiful.
Wow, 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 kind of thing.
Is there a veil out there in reception that we could bring in?
Attempt a belly dance.
We need TV.
What I face were people saying, but I'm not racist because I've got Asian boyfriends. Mm. And it's like a lack of understanding. And one of the first times I confronted this was back in the when HIV/AIDS first came out, and there were extensive psychological tests attached to blood tests because they were trying to ascertain, were there contributing factors towards us having or not having HIV? So 100 questions about how you lived your life. And one of them was, do you find black men attractive? And I stopped and turned to the psychologist and said, well, what does that mean? You know, I happened to have an Indian lover at the time. He said, well, you obviously do find black men attractive. I said, well, no, the way the question's written is, do you find all black men attractive? Is that a turn-on for you?
Yeah.
Look, I think that's a really, really good point because I think it's impossible for any person in this entire world to say that they don't have some element of racism or prejudice in them.
Like, absolutely.
Sure, we can't pretend like we grow up in an environment where we're not influenced by what's around us.
I think what's on Hey Hey It's Saturday.
But it's recognising you have those prejudices is the really important thing.
And then exploring, like, where does it come from? Like, when you were a child, did your dad say something about a particular group of people or did you have an experience at the age of, you know, 8 and you're never going to let go of that now? Mm. Or
did you grow up in Australia?
Watching Hey Hey It's Saturday.
And even just, like, an affinity for who you are that, where you don't fully understand the other, so that otherness has some sense of foreignness about it. Yeah, that I think it's about meeting and understanding. I was saying in the early part of the program today that with discrimination, a lot of the desire for bigotry and discrimination is because people haven't actually sat down and spoken to someone of the grouping that they're discriminating against, so they don't understand, and it's easy to push the other apart and aside and say, they're not like me, therefore I have to be frightened of them, rather than they're not like me, how exciting.
Yeah, and look, I think that brings up a point that there is some arguments, I think, out there that that sort of discrimination or even prejudice is innate in us all. And if you're looking at it from a, you know, Darwinian sort of evolutionary sort of point of view, that in many respects that may have been a good thing, because difference in a more basic sort of society than what we live now could mean danger. So to be aware or frightened of difference, somebody that's not the same as us, someone who's not from our gene pool, may in fact have been a way of protecting ourselves from danger.
And that works in the animal kingdom.
Yeah.
You know, it's like the lions are trying to, you know, the rabbits are trying to stay away from the lions. But it doesn't work in the human world.
Precisely.
Because that's where, when we do the animal thing and we go, oops, we don't like you, we're going to now bomb your country.
Hmm.
The cartoonist in me is trying to picture little bunny rabbits across the plains of Africa now.
Yeah.
Rabbit-proof friends in Africa. But I've got to disagree with the both of you. I think that racism is very much a learnt thing, just like homophobia. Mm. If we look at younger people, it's that great line from the South Pacific song, we've got to be taught to properly hate before we are 6 or 7
or
8.
We have to be carefully taught.
Yes. Mm. And I look at younger people, I look at my 3 kids have got 3 different cultural ethnic backgrounds, and you know, it just is the way it is. The school they went to was very integrated. The younger the people are these days, they're more likely to have grown up in a very big mix, that great big melting pot, to go back to a song from your youth. Yeah. I say that nicely.
Great Jeff, big you. Melting pot. Yeah, well, you know, it's, I don't mind. It was good song.
Yeah.
Just like to let you all know, every time you make jokes about being older, you're excluding me because I'm not as old as you guys. So
I don't feel that we are,
I I'm feeling quite excluded right now. You know, I'm in the corner.
I think you're quite old.
And now she's throwing her arms up in the air.
What do I say to
that? How does
that
work?
We need to take a break, folks. This discussion's very, very interesting. So hold on to your thoughts. You're listening to Joy 94.9, Saturday Magazine, hosted by, which one's the host?
You
and I.
Yeah.
Jeff and Carol and our guests Kenton and Elena. We'll return to our discussion very soon.
Joy 94.9.
The discussion we were having, because we do keep talking even when the ads are on, that's terrible. We should be listening to our valued sponsors, we know, was about how you dress clothing-wise in order to communicate what age you are. And I personally feel that youth has such value within our communities. I'll say communities to save myself the initialisms. And that in fact, we tend to be mutton dressed up as lamb. There's only a certain time period that you can get away with dressing a certain way. And I'm old enough now that I look at some of the current trends, particularly in haircuts, sideburns, etc., and I want to say, I can remember my uncles and elder siblings having those haircuts and sideburns. They really regret those photographs. Don't do it to yourself. In 30 years' time, you'll be so embarrassed looking
and
the
flares.
Way you're looking
Did
at
you
the moment.
Flares and it's, platforms.
I was going to say, you only have to have lived through the 70s as an adult, where you were, in fact, buying your own clothes, to know that we can make some really big mistakes.
Well, no, or be an alert child in the 70s, yes. Looking around you, yeah. Going, oh, yeah. My God, do they know what they look like?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Yes, I've got those photographs, 70s photographs, not good.
But
colours even, you know.
If being young is what's most valued, then we tend to try and dress young for as long as we can get away with it, and then it becomes a tipping point where it just becomes try hard. But then, as Elena, you were saying off air, what age do we dress for?
And the problem, though, I think also in the queer community is most of the clothes aren't... Well, okay, my partner is pregnant at the moment, and try and find funky maternity clothes for a dyke. It's just not possible. Like, she wants to wear...
I would have thought it was a growth market, no, so to speak.
Well, yeah. Well, you'd think that too, but she's been to a couple of stores and they're just tents, and she doesn't wear dresses and skirts, so she's struggling a bit to find some nice tops and some nice clothes. And that's exactly what she said. She said, I can't believe that they haven't tapped into a market for it. So that's one whole discussion on its own. But one thing, though, that both of us were talking about the other day is that we both seem to dress the same way we did 5 or 6 years ago, in that we still wear, you know, shirts, polos.
I've got friends
jeans.
Listening right now saying Carol still dresses the way she did 40 years ago.
Well, no, I've got a theory about this, because my theory is that we tend to dress to reflect our sexual peak. Because in one of the workplaces I worked in, there's a chap who I've discussed this with my co-workers there back when I was at that place is a heterosexual man who must have had his sexual peak when the Chapel Brothers were big in Australia.
Oh, right.
Because he looks like a lapsed chapel, so to speak, with that moustache belly and the good eye, how you going kind of thing.
So he hasn't sort of trimmed the moustache back up to the top lip. It's still hanging down
the sides.
Okay. See, I have no idea what anyone's talking about right now.
So, okay, but this is ancient land.
It is.
Okay,
obviously cricket.
Again, I'm being excluded.
70s or 80s.
So oppressive.
Yes, well, I'm sorry. What's your ethnic sport of your cultural background?
Ethnic sport of my cultural background.
Wiffle board? No?
Can I read an email that we've got here that says, you really are fools. Of course you can say you don't find Asians or blacks attractive and not be racist. So if you're gay and you don't want to sleep with a woman, are you sexist? You can have friends in all races but only find some attractive. What about people that find bears attractive but would never sleep with a twinker? They're ageist. I don't understand
twink,
what twink
no,
is.
A twink. Are they ageist?
Oh, twink, are they? Yeah. Okay, twink, yes.
Well, it's
about choice and preferences, not racism.
Well, if it were expressed as preference, that would be less offensive. Among my friends of Asian background, it's much less offensive for someone to list on their profile that they happen to be into a bear or a twink or whatever than it is to say they're not into Asians. So
it's language. It's language.
So it's the difference between expressing a positive preference rather than a preference against.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it comes back to that same thing about, just because you are a gay man, do you fancy all men? Of course you don't fancy all men. If you're a lesbian, do you fancy every woman that walks down past you on the street? Of course you don't. I think that a lot of heterosexual people think that we do. Why is it that men, straight men, make jokes about turning their back to the wall if there's a gay man in the room, you know? Are you so, do you think you're so attractive that every gay man's going to fancy you?
I just don't find you that attractive.
One of the clues to me came from years ago when I was talking to a straight colleague who was quite open about his predilections. And one of the things he said to me was, I have to say, in every woman I look at, there is at least one thing about her that I would be able to focus on in order to take her to bed.
Good Lord.
And I think, well, if that's the case, maybe that's what they've projected upon us, we have that capacity, but I lack that ability, as you say, with all men.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm. One small feature ain't going to rescue them from, from how I interpret their politics or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm. Interesting. Well, there's a little silence.
Well, no, that's...
No, I'm actually trying to imagine having sex with everyone in this room right now.
What, all together?
Please don't. Yeah.
And it's not working.
Carol, pull the blinds down. Pull the blinds down.
Your partner is incredibly relieved
I did... you did say something, Kenton, that I agree with, that I think we do dress to reflect maybe our sexual peak, because I do remember being a very randy 20-something and... Everyone was put in fuckable and not fuckable categories. Like everyone I met, all of my friends, I believed that you became better friends with your friends if you had sex with them, and then you could still be friends, or then they weren't your friends. And I did go through that because that was how I was geared, and that was very important to me, exploring my own sexual orientation, yada yada yada. I'm now at that point where I don't instinctively see people like that. So I think that they're probably for anyone who's focusing on just sex, then potentially, they're going to be going, all right, I am going to just look at you and decide whether I find your toe attractive and your toe is enough for me to go, take you home or not.
It's more than sex, because I think there's almost a desperation that we've bought into this myth that in our 20s we have to have met our life partner. If we haven't by 30, your devastating date that you offered before, Jeff, then does that mean we're destined to be single forever?
Yeah.
And if a relationship collapses in our 30s, how dateable are we in our 40s? Because where do we go? Mm. And if the places that we go out to are ruled by youth, then how do we cope with being single in those locations when we're post-youth, when we're in that limbo? Because I've got friends in their 60s and older who cope much better with aging than I do sometimes. And you know, part of that is this limbo between 35 and 55 almost.
So the internet protects people from that, though, doesn't it? Or it fills that gap, because it means that for people who wouldn't, or if they did go out to venues to looking for someone, they can't now, because they know they'll go there and they'll get, oh, there's the creepy old man in the corner, or there's the creepy old woman there. And maybe the internet, with all the million and one dating sites, is giving people the chance to find
someone. Still the creepy old lady in the corner, mind you.
Oh, yeah, she's logging on with all the cats.
She's logged on. Do you think that we're just frightened of getting old, that, and that's part of the reason why we have that sort of a little bit of inherent sort of ageism?
But what is
ageism?
Old?
Well, but yes, but what is old? But are we frightened
old
of it?
Is someone in their 80s or 90s.
Like, thank you.
I mean, I wouldn't say. Well, this is actually something that I had to learn, because as of maybe 3 or 4 months ago, I said to my partner, oh, my God, yeah, no, I met this person. And Catherine's like, was she cute? And I said, oh, no, she's all right, but she's a bit old. And Catherine goes, what, is she 50? And I said, yeah, I think she's 50 or 51. And Catherine's like, no, you really need to explore why you think someone in their 50s is old. And I said, well, because my parents are in their 50s and they're old. Yeah.
So, and old gets older as you get older.
But now I'm going, well, maybe 50s isn't old. Yeah. Granted, my parents are old, because parents will always be old. Mm. But I know people in their 50s. I am friends with people in their 50s. So how can I think of them as old?
And my mother has just turned 80 and says, I don't feel 80. And I talk to her now as someone, as I always have. She doesn't seem 80 to me. So what is 80? And now, at my age, 80 doesn't seem too far away. I mean, it's a couple of decades, but it's not like a whole lifetime.
I think there's a couple of things we get frightened of, to answer your question, Carol, about getting old. One of them is the creaking inevitability of our bodies starting to fall to pieces a little
bit. That's true.
But within our community as well, one of the things I fear is having less value, because our community doesn't embrace or even understand its history. There's very little sense of anything like that being appreciated. And because it's a culture of inventing ourselves, the first time we go out to a venue, life started then. It's fabulous. One of the lessons I discovered when I turned 40 was I thought back to when my parents had been that age, and they seemed so old to me then. And now I think, oh my gosh, this was me back then. And how do I know so little compared to what I'd attributed to them? And yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? I think that the thing that I am aware of most getting old is how the relativism of time changes. Like, I think back 30 years and it seems like such a short time. And I think ahead 30 years and think, oh my God, you know, what age I'll be then. And it doesn't seem that far away. I think it's the sense of the acceleration of my life, I think, that bothers me most. I don't know, what would others say about that?
Well, I want to ask you all a question then. If you could go back and visit 21-year-old version of yourself, what message of reassurance would you want to give them about who you are?
I'd probably first tell myself to stop shaving your head and wearing Harry High Pants, because I have photos of myself at 21. I don't know why I was doing Harry High Pants. I thought it was cool, and the shaved head, not a good idea. So I'd probably say that first of all. Mm-hmm. But then the second thing I'd probably tell myself is just, and this is going to sound ridiculous, but don't try so hard. Yeah. Like, it's inevitable that you will, you know, go through different stages. Just accept it then. Don't try so hard to be a carbon copy of all the other men and women that you're around, because you think that that's the only way you can be queer.
Yeah.
Like, just try and just be you. Don't do the Bonds thing.
Yeah.
The trying stuff for me is interesting, because I got a 20-year-old friend who I was spending time with last year, and I can remember he grabbed one of my hats and said, I could be a hat person. Maybe that's me. Maybe I'm the guy who wears hats. And it was the best illustration of what it is to be trying on personalities and trying to discover who you are. Mm. You live life with a fast forward button on then, because you have a need to be all of a sudden who you're going to be, rather than live into it.
Or alternatively, I think I held back too much. I don't think I went with that fast forward thing enough. So my advice would be, you know, follow your passion, look for opportunities and bugger the risk. Now, for some people, I think it's, you're right, there is that youthful kind of go for it. But I was too held in, and that's what I regret. And so there's, I think there's a range of senses of engaging with that fire and passion.
I also have a confession to make. The reason why I commented on the bonds thing is the fact that I still haven't thrown them away. I can't fission them. They live in a drawer in our house, and I have all these little size 10 bonds, and there is no way that I could... I'd probably get one on my thigh or something like that. They're yeah. just not going to fit. But I'm holding on to something. There is definitely this need to hold on.
So you're holding on to that sort of 21-year-old sort of, I'm still wearing bonds.
I keep on telling my partner, I'll use them as inners in winter. I'll use them as inners. And she's like, winter's just gone and you still didn't wear any. Oh, next winter.
Mm. Folks, it's time for us to finish up. Thank you very much, Kenton and Elena, for joining us on Saturday Magazine, for being our panel. Invigorating and enlightening.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.